You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today. Welcome to PX Pulse. I'm Jean Barron.
At the end of November, AVAC published its 2017 annual report, this year titled Mixed Messages and How to Untangle Them. Each year, the AVAC report gives us a rich picture of the state of the field and puts forward concrete priorities to keep the world on track to end the HIV epidemic.
Emily Bass has contributed to the AVAC report since 2002, and this is the 22nd year that AVAC has been watchdogging the field. Emily's joining me today to bring into focus a very dynamic story about HIV prevention in 2017 and what to watch in the year ahead. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Jean.
As I read through AVAC 2017, I came away with a feeling there's tremendous potential to gain or lose ground, to leverage great advances or squander opportunities in a number of critical areas of work right now. What are the mixed messages that we're highlighting in this report? How do they connect to the most important trends in HIV prevention?
This year, there are some major mixed messages. One of the ones that I think is most central to the work of advocates and activists everywhere is that there is a gap in funding for the global HIV/AIDS response. It's a $7 billion gap between now and 2020, which is the deadline for these fast-track targets that UNAIDS set out. They said if we hit these targets, we will be on the road to ending epidemic levels of HIV infections and AIDS deaths. So fast-track deadline is fast upon us, and there is a $7 billion gap over the years that will pass between now and that 2020 deadline. At the same time, UNAIDS has, after years of really foregrounding antiretrovirals for people living with HIV, has really begun to talk about other prevention strategies. It has begun to talk about prevention for HIV-negative people, which is a category of interventions that is called by public health professionals primary prevention for people who are HIV-negative and at risk. And primary prevention includes voluntary medical male circumcision, daily oral PrEP, behavioral interventions, structural interventions, keeping girls in school, rights-based programming for key populations, non-judgmental services for gay men and other men who have sex with men, including condoms and lube, syringe exchange and harm reduction. All of that can be primary prevention.
A whole spectrum.
Whole spectrum. UNAIDS is talking about primary prevention, and we are thrilled about that because they have not always held up primary prevention and secondary prevention, which is for people living with HIV, as equal pillars. The mixed message is that they are foregrounding this as a priority in the context of a funding gap. So what does it mean when we are foregrounding primary prevention and there is really no new money? And in fact, countries who are striving to achieve the targets for treating people living with HIV find their funding envelopes empty, more or less empty, by the time it comes around to primary prevention. So there's a real mixed message in saying, this is a priority, go forth and do it, with no new resources. Another mixed message that we really try to take on relates to daily oral PrEP, a new prevention strategy that's not really so new. It's been introduced in the U.S. for some time now, and it is really gaining hold in East and Southern Africa, in Sub-Saharan Africa, where it is the first tool that adolescent girls and young women, they can use it without negotiating with their partner. It's a pill. You take it once a day. It does not need to be taken around the time of sex. So it has a real potential for people who cannot negotiate with their partners to be something that is in their control. We have nothing else to offer people right now. So the issue is this product is very new. And when a new product is put out into the market, it takes a while for it to catch on. There is a rich history about this. It took 20 years before women really started using the tampon. As an example, 20 years for people to decide this was something that fit into their lives and their purses.
It seems like we're at a moment where people are not aware of that history. They're not being patient with the way that you need to let a new intervention take hold, let people figure out how it fits in their lives.
So I think it comes back again to resources. There's an understandable anxiety in the context of constrained resources to use all resources to the best advantage. And this really ties in with another mixed message in the report, so I'll try to pull it all together. There's a desire to find prevention tools for HIV-negative people that take the user out of it. A shot that would protect you for months, whether it's a vaccine or a long-acting antiretroviral, something that would really take your daily life out of the picture, whether you remember the pill or don't, to take that user part of it out. If you think about it, if you have a finite amount of money to spend on HIV prevention, let's spend it on things that have the best shot of working. And we support the research very much on vaccines, on long-acting injectables, on passive immunization, which uses potent antibodies, a human immune response, to try to protect people who are HIV negative. Absolutely want to see these tools in play. However, we also know from the history of contraceptives and family planning and from many other areas of public health that people need different things at different times in their lives, that some people really want a shot where you can set it and forget it, as they say. Some people want to be able to say, you know what, I want to come off of this method. I don't have to talk. I'm going to stop taking it tomorrow.
Actually, this brings us to, you're laying out what the mixed messages are, some of the problems that arise from these mixed messages. AVAC has centered on three major recommendations for 2018. What are they? And what kind of difference will it make if we do or don't see these recommendations adopted?
So the three messages, the three recommendations take the form of messages. And we like to think of them as untangled messages, as really clear messages, not a mixed message. And they address these points that I was just talking about. And the first message is systemic prevention, which is the scientific term for a shot that would stay in your body. Systemic meaning throughout your body. It could be a long-acting injectable form of an antiretroviral. So injectable PrEP, it could be a vaccine, it could be an antibody. The message is systemic prevention is a priority, but not a standalone solution.
Because different women need different things, different men need different things at different points in their lives. You need a variety of interventions.
Different people need different things. We know this to be true. We also know that daily oral PrEP is taking off like gangbusters in America. Among men who, primarily men at this point, who at the outset of introduction were not using it extensively. So we know that in real time, daily oral PrEP is being integrated into people's lives. We also know that all of the strategies that I just named are not remotely going to be available for 3 years, 4 years, possibly longer in terms of how long the trials will take. So in the absence of other strategies, we must be also introducing these existing interventions that people can use today. The next message really relates to the first message, and that is daily oral PrEP as a prevention tool is struggling in some contexts and it's soaring in others. We can hold two things in our minds and our realities at the same time. Daily oral PrEP may not fit in everybody's lives, but what we see happening now is very early information on the numbers of people who take PrEP when offered it in South Africa, which is one of the earliest countries to introduce it, in Kenya, in Zimbabwe, small numbers, relatively small numbers. And I'm being very careful not to use the word low because I don't think we can say that it's low uptake, but relatively small numbers of people are choosing to try to start PrEP. Many of those people are not staying on it for long periods of time. The history of product introduction tells us this is exactly what we would expect. Now is the time to say, you know what, we see what it looks like in the U.S. where it's been in place for a while. We know that these women and girls and men who have sex with men and other key populations who are really, really still acquiring HIV at very high rates need a chance to figure out where this fits in their lives.
A lot of what you're talking about makes me think of a big section of this year's AVAC report that focuses on the National Institute of Health's Division of AIDS, or DAIDS, and restructuring underway there. This matters a great deal because DAIDS is one of the biggest funders in the world for prevention research, and DAIDS priorities are generating a huge debate right now about the role of long-acting prevention, like a vaccine, versus user-controlled prevention, like oral PrEP or a topical microbicide. How's all this playing out, and what does AVAC have to say?
One of the things that is on the table right now that the leader of the Division of AIDS has said repeatedly is that he would like to collapse the microbicide trial network and the HIV prevention trial network together. Now, the microbicide trial network looks at topical HIV prevention. That could be a ring. It could be a microbicide. It could be a film. There's a real sense at DAIDS that given the amount of money that we have in this and the urgency of the epidemic, we don't need to be investing in user-controlled methods. Here's what AVAC has to say. You don't know enough to know what you should be investing in. And given that these networks exist for 7 years, do not structure your networks based on what you believe rather than what you know.
There's critical information missing.
Precisely.
What is it?
We have not systematically invested in research on what people want, how they want to use products, how they will fit into their lives, and what they will use if we support them. This is not an art. It is a science. It is not a set of focus groups. It is a whole body of work that includes things like human-centered design is a term that's used, user-centered design, and behavioral and social science research. All of these things really come into play. One of the things to note is that the Microbicides Trial Network has brought us a tremendous amount of behavioral and social science research in the context of trying to understand why the women in its trials have and have not used products.
What are we calling on DAIDS to do?
So there's a few things. Consider the strengths of the existing networks and not to lose those strengths. So the MTN and the HPTN could merge if we were confident that a women's prevention agenda, and that really is what MTN has carried, even as much as the vaccine trials today are in women, long-acting injectable PrEP is in women, the MTN has been the keeper of the women's prevention agenda. Right. So we are looking for assurances that strengths will be preserved and that they will be elevated in terms of a cross-cutting research agenda. Show us how we can be sure that you have a cohesive set of trials and messages that meet women's needs.
There are people who continue to say we have the tools to end AIDS now. Do you think it's true? And do you think we can really end the epidemic in our lifetime?
What we're talking about is fewer new cases of HIV than AIDS deaths. So our beloved comrades living with HIV live long, healthy lives, and we don't have new diagnoses. That's really what we're heading for. I do believe we can do that in my lifetime. I really do. We have the wherewithal to do it everywhere. We do not have the funds. We do not have the environment. And I want to talk particularly, AVAC doesn't even work in some of the countries where HIV is exploding. And I'm thinking particularly of Russia, which we actually mentioned in the executive director letter, where both deaths and new infections have risen in the last year. There are more people living with HIV in Russia than anywhere else in Europe. And those people have access to almost none of the interventions that I've talked about that work. So as long as that context is the reality, we cannot talk about ending the global epidemic or even being on the path to global epidemic control.
What does that mean for advocacy in the year ahead?
Well, you know, this is a question where I wish I could crowd this room with the people that we do the advocacy with. I really do, because these messages that we convey are really ones that come up through the work that we do on a daily basis in so many different contexts where we are listening and following the lead of our allies. And what we learn daily and model and seek to advance is not compromising. So advocacy in the coming year cannot compromise on the types of products that are researched. It cannot compromise on the types of prevention that are offered to participants in trials. And it cannot compromise on the quality of daily oral PrEP programs offered to adolescent girls, young women, and key populations in Southern Africa. It cannot compromise on the amount of money that is available for the AIDS response. And it can't compromise on the number of countries that are crowded into this group of potential success stories while countries like Russia are left out in the cold.
Thank you, Emily.
Thanks, Jean.
You've been listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today.